Your window on the city, Cambridge 105.
I think it has to do with the fact that it affects everybody's life every day. It's something that you can't get away from, can you? So even the most mundane things like putting out your clothes after you've washed them on the clothes hanger outside, you know, it's one of those things that you just can't escape.
And I guess you must be fascinated with it yourself to have gone down the line that you've taken.
I have, yes. It started at a very early age for me, actually. I think weather was about the only thing I ever wanted to do, to be honest. I can remember being in primary school, and I used to be the weatherman in primary school. They would let me go over the loudspeaker and give the weather forecast, even in like year 3 and 4.
That's a great story. I love that. But did you have the knowledge to back it up then, or did that come later?
Well, I mean, as a kid, I loved any book that had any weather information in it, and I was fascinated by clouds. I can remember when my grandmother would look after me as a little kid. A lot of times in the southern Texas where I'm from, in the summertime, the mornings would start off with no clouds in the sky, and then the clouds would start to build, and you would get a thunderstorm just about somewhere nearby every afternoon in the summer. And I can remember we used to watch these clear mornings, and we would have this game we would play. The first person to spot a cloud got a treat that day, and it's something I still do today whenever we have a clear morning.
Now, you mentioned your international roots there and the fact that you're from Texas. Like any good interviewer, the first thing I did when I knew I was going to be speaking to you was Google Chris Bell, and the first thing that comes up is Chris Bell accent. So yes, this is something that people are sort of fascinated with about you, isn't it?
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously, as soon as I open my mouth, it's obvious I'm not from around here. But the funny thing is, actually, now I've been in Norfolk for about 15 years. When I go back and visit family in Texas and go into a shop, they ask me where I'm from now. So the accent is very messed up. And especially people that watch me on BBC Look East, I'll get occasional tweets every time I'm on that'll say something like, where is that guy from?
In a friendly way.
Sometimes not in a so friendly way, but you know, I respond to everyone.
Do you? You don't just ignore those sorts of people?
No. I usually ask them. Sometimes it's a comment about, why is that accent on our TV, on our local TV? And, you know, it's kind of funny because I'm married to an English woman and I've got English kids. And I'm eligible to apply for a citizenship here in this country as well. And I'm going to do that soon. So I'm looking forward to the time where I can answer back by saying, well, I am English.
Now, we mentioned as well, of course, as well as BBC Look East, you're also a WeatherQuest director. Tell us about the company. What sort of thing does it do?
Yeah, so WeatherQuest was started back in 2001 by someone that many of your listeners will remember on the television, Jim Bacon. He used to do the national BBC weather and spent a long time on Anglia TV as well and did BBC Look East too. But around the turn of the century, the Met Office started closing down all of their, a lot of their local weather offices around the country. And so Jim was at the point in his career, I think he had kids that were in school, getting near high school, and he didn't want to up and move everyone down to Exeter where the new Met Office headquarters was going to be. So he thought instead of having to move, he was based at Norwich Weather Center as part of the Met Office at that time, and he said, you know, I'll start my own private weather company. And he used the agricultural industry in East Anglia as a base for our customers, and it's moved on since then. We do lots of work for newspapers. Occasionally, we do the stuff for the BBC, and a lot of our new work is coming in the renewable energy sector. So, you know, a lot of the wind farms that are being built around the country and off in the North Sea, those guys doing construction and maintenance need weather information to make that work correctly.
I mean, obviously, I guess there's a lot of science involved in predicting the weather and try to build these sorts of models that will tell us what will happen next. Do people ever just mistake you for someone reading an auto cue?
Yeah, you do get that question a lot. I like to point out that the weather people on the TV, we're not reading auto cue. In fact, we are ad-libbing all of that. By having the charts behind us, but the news readers will actually see the text in their camera in front of them. The weather person doesn't have any of that. And so it's a difficult job because you've got somebody talking in your ear and you're also trying to explain the weather, and you really have to have a deep knowledge of what's going on to make that come off clearly. But the behind the scenes stuff is probably more fun to me, if I'm honest. The challenge of getting the forecast right, and then when it doesn't go right, you know, that's when you learn from from it. And that's the only way to get better as a forecaster, really.
So linked to that, have you had your own Michael Fish moment?
I've had a few small moments with customers of WeatherQuest that where I don't get it wrong, and as many of your listeners probably are in the agricultural industry, you know, the farmers will definitely let you know if you get it wrong. So there have been one or two of those moments, but you know, over the course of 10 years, you're going to have one or two of those moments, yeah. No matter how good of a forecaster you are.
Yeah, that's not a bad average. I think you're allowed that. So when we're used to seeing you on Look East, I'm always fascinated. Is it a green screen you're standing in front of, or can you actually see all the maps and things behind you?
Well, that's actually an interesting question when it comes to BBC Look East. So when I did my training back in America, we learned how to do that with green screen or blue screen behind you. And so the map would be put in by what they call chroma key into the television screen. And all you would see is a picture of yourself in the camera in front that you were looking into. And then you would have a monitor off to the side that would show you your maps as well, so that if you turned toward the map and pointed, you'd see yourself. But at Look East, they actually do have the video in the on the wall behind you. The funny thing is, though, they've set it up to where you have to stand about 4 feet away from it. So if you try to point to something on that screen, it isn't actually where you're pointing in the camera. So you kind of have to act like it's not there.
And I guess it's very apt that we're speaking to you today, because obviously Storm Doris has been in the news over the last couple of days and has wreaked a fair bit of havoc, hasn't it, around the east?
Yeah, it has brought down quite a few trees, and obviously there was a travel disruption as well. One of the windiest days we've had in quite a long time in East Anglia. A report of wind gust of 81 miles per hour was the highest reported, and that was at Weyburn on the North Norfolk coast. But yeah, I live about 15 miles outside of Norwich, where our office is, and I made that drive home yesterday at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I saw at least a dozen trees down and had to change my route home a couple of times to avoid roads that were blocked.
So are we seeing more of these sorts of storms, or is this sort of roughly what you'd expect for this time of year?
Yeah, that's also a good question. I mean, you do get that question a lot in the media with, you know, with climate change being something that people are more, I guess, aware of, and whether or not these sort of extreme weather events will become more common as we go into the future. I think there's a little bit of that involved with these more extreme events that we're seeing, but also I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're a kind of living in the now culture. I mean, with social media and 24-hour news and that sort of thing, you hear a lot about things that maybe 20 years ago, if a severe weather event affected somewhere that was in the next county to you, you might not hear about it, and you know, even for a week or two. But nowadays, you know, everybody's all over that kind of thing.
Yeah, and you see a lot of it on Facebook, that you get pictures of people with snow and ice and wind, and I guess it just make everyone more aware of what's going on.
It does, yeah, and it's actually helpful for the forecasters as well, believe it or not. I mean, you know, that's one of the things we keep up with as a forecaster. You have the Twitter feeds, and you look after some of the hashtag things, like yesterday in the office we had on our screen, hashtag Storm Doris, and we could see pictures coming in of damage and that kind of thing, and it helps sort of verify your forecast and focus your attention on where the sort of extreme weather is happening. So it's kind of a double-edged sword in a way, because some of that stuff, you know, it gets in the way, but many times it can be helpful as well.
And tell us about the name, because obviously Storm Doris is quite an interesting name. I think it's a great name, but does it follow a similar system to the sort of hurricanes in the States?
Yeah, so the naming of winter storms in Britain only started, this is the second winter that the Met Office has started doing it. So the Met Office and the Irish Met Service decided a couple of years ago to sort of help people, you know, be aware of severe weather that's coming. If there was a low pressure area that had a strong enough area of low pressure and the winds were going to be disruptive and that kind of thing, that they would start to name these storms to hopefully get more people talking about them and aware of what's going to happen from them. And so I think that's where it started. And I think it was initially people submitted what they wanted to have as a name in there. And the Met Office kind of drew from a pot to come up with what names they have. So there's a list of them, basically. You can go on their site and find that out.
That's dangerous. Otherwise, we might end up with something like Stormy McStormerson or something along those lines, which would be awful. So, Chris, we can't really have you on the program without asking you to do a little bit of forecasting for us. So if you wouldn't mind, please, for Sunday the 26th of February 2017, what's the weather going to be like in Cambridge?
Yeah, well, I think it's actually going to start off not too bad of a day. We'll see some sunshine in the morning, and then eventually cloud amounts will increase from the west. And we do have a weather front coming in off the Atlantic, so it's going to spread a lot of rain across Ireland, western parts of Britain in the morning on Sunday. And then eventually, I think toward the end of the afternoon, especially into the evening, we'll see some rain arriving across Cambridgeshire itself. But most of that should be out of the way by Monday. And then actually, the first part of the week will start off a little bit chillier than it has been. And we'll also see some showers around at times as well. So a bit of an unsettled one. It's a real mix of sunshine and showers Monday, Tuesday time. But I think most of Sunday staying dry until, like I say, very end of the day toward the evening.
Chris, that's brilliant. Thank you very much for the forecast. And we look forward to seeing you on BBC Look East very, very soon again.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you for having me on.